Leo and those guys will be coming too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like we discussed, we want to highlight the memory allocation property of the
database. I don't know. I can't hear you at all.
So we want to focus the region system properties that are unique, like MSync, that is atomic MSync for data. We just done that. So we can show in the table that, okay, these are the properties that is covered by these systems, all the systems that are developed until now. And one of the columns will be our system up there.
Mm.
That tells, okay, we have this unique thing that we are doing. And then there's a...
So we are writing atomic MSync region system.
Yes.
Is that what we decided? I mean, that we are going to do atomic MSync? Can you open the door, please? Come on.
Is it time?
Yeah. It's just that I can barely hear him with the door open. So he decided to close the door.
You're back.
Yeah.
So
I thought we had a good discussion about this paper should be, and it's not about it all, just about atomic
MSync. That's the one part of it.
Yeah, so tell me the right story, right? Because you're misleading me right now. Maybe you need to, do you want to go back and revisit this story, or?
Yes.
You want to? Okay. So I would say go back to that conversation we had the other day so that you have a good sense of what this story is. It's not about atomic MSync. As you know and I know, that atomic MSync has already been published.
Yes.
Right? For a certain use case.
For volatile memory with SSD.
And in FAST, there will be another atomic FSync paper.
Yeah,
there's going to be an atomic FSync paper in FAST, where they basically are using copy-on-write, but building on top of some copy-on-write file system and using snapshotting capability to do this atomic FSync.
For regular files? For regular
disk? For regular files, disk drives. Yeah, not for persistent memory. So those previous works on atomic MSync and atomic FSync are for disk drives.
It doesn't apply directly, but still, I think we can borrow some ideas on that.
I think we have to figure out what is the uniqueness of this work. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult to sell it, given that these two ideas already exist out there. That's what I'm more concerned about. So what is it that is unique? In that table, you're saying that we only talk about persistent memory and not these other contributions because they're not to do with persistent memory.
Yes. I created the table with the solutions that relate to persistent memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't... include the atomic MSync or the prior to that monitor, the one I just read.
Okay, why monitor? Why not monitor?
Actually, that doesn't discuss various kinds of performance for various kinds of memory, but they don't have a solution that completely bypass the operating system.
Okay. Do all the other solutions completely bypass the operating system?
No.
So what is the reason to exclude that and keep the rest?
I didn't think of that initially.
Okay. So, yeah. I think maybe you have a hangover from the candidacy exam that you need to get over. Use this week to get reoriented with what you've been doing. Because there's, like you know, there is not much time remaining for the annual tech deadline.
8 weeks.
And certainly, you know, you should be talking to Leo, trying to sell him the paper as well, and see what, you know, the feedback you can get. Try to sell everyone in the, you know, sell your paper to everyone in the lab, every person in the lab.
Okay.
But before you do that, you have to sell it to yourself first. Because in the end, that's what research is all about, is how can you convince someone else that what you're doing is valuable. It's all about communication. So use this week, reorient yourself, and then, you know, next week we can talk about your story. And hopefully you'll have the table as well by then.
Yeah, I'll write something.
Yeah.
Write this story.
Sounds good. How's it going?
Finals week, so it's
busy.
Yeah. So at least a little bit on edge, but it's gonna end for me soon, so tomorrow night's my last one. I'll be ready to just start Christmas break. Finally.
But okay. Yeah.
But in terms of the project, I think my assignment from last time was just looking into the recombine buffers, and because I mentioned I saw that MemoSign was using it while you guys were having your discussion. The hardware implementation of it, and the one MemoSign uses is DEX86 instructions for recombining buffers, just to increase throughput. And
so they do use x86 instructions to
for their primitives. They use the recombine effort. It's like MOVNT. It's yeah, but there's a recombine buffer. Instruction that they use for the primitives.
So what is it? I mean, you have to educate all of us now.
It's like
a mystery right now.
So the CPU just takes the writes and puts it in a buffer before actually sending out to the DRAM and cache, so that it can write multiple words, have multiple words be used to the cache line at once.
Okay, yeah.
So, to increase the throughput.
Isn't that the store buffer, though? Isn't that the store buffer? No? I mean, the write combining buffer, I thought, was after for items that got evicted out of the cache. And the store buffer is the one where you perform a write before you update the cache line. If the cache line doesn't exist, you have to go fetch it from memory. So instead of waiting to fetch it from memory, you put the whatever you updated into the store buffer. And later on, when the line is fetched into the cache, then you merge it with the line in the cache. So that's the store buffer, as it allows you to write very quickly.
Misused the cache. You're talking about the CPU cache, right? No,
mm-hmm.
No, the one I was referring to is the one in DRAM.
Okay. Then I don't understand how the CPU instructions matter.
Isn't it the policy of the write combine, like similar to write through, but when they write, when it writes, just combines the cache lines before writing for better performance. I know that. That's what I know. That write combined is similar to write through, but combine the buffer, or combine the cache line before writing it through.
Similar to write through.
Yes.
In which way?
Write through.
It's not just a policy for using the cache. It's also, there's a physical component that's called the write combining buffer. It's typically used for the display, the data that is sent to the monitor. It goes through the write combining buffer too.
Okay.
But it's not just a way to use the cache. I think that's what he's describing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was talking about the policy.
No, I'm lost.
There is
the CPU caches, you can either not use it as a write-back cache, as a write-through cache, or as a write-combining cache.
Write-combining cache.
Right.
Okay.
but we're talking about physical component that's called the write combining buffer. Is that what you're talking about, right? Which is in the CPU hierarchy.
He was the one who was talking about it, so I would ask him what he was talking about.
Well, so which write combining buffer are you talking about?
It seems to me it's a buffer in the CPU before it gets sent not to the CPU cache, but before it gets sent to DRAM.
Hmm. Okay, yeah.
But this write combining buffer is in between the CPU caches and DRAM.
Yes.
I think that makes sense, because that's where you would have to combine multiple cache lines that got evicted. Not multiple, the same. So let's say you evict the same cache line more than once, all those writes get merged into one.
Yes.
Like they coalesce multiple evictions into one before sending it out to memory. That's between the cache and the memory, and it's, you could think of it as part of the memory controller, but could be implemented in a different way. Could be part of the memory controller or not. Like the write combining buffer. Is that what you're talking about?
I don't know.
Why don't you go do some more research on this write combining buffer? Because
yeah, I thought I had it, but probably.
No, but tell us what you thought before, because maybe we are misleading you in some way.
I probably just believed I had the overall view, but maybe it's not as detailed as I thought. I was naive about my naiveness.
That's fine. Just go deeper. I mean, one level deeper. And we go as deep as is necessary to understand this thing or have some reasonable understanding. And what that usually means is that you can make the three of us understand. So that's the goal for you.
Good.
Okay, sounds good. Why don't you do that? Leo, what's going on with you?
I was able to get to run the test that we talked about last week, in which you have a linked list, you have multiple nodes, and then you create a node in the container and make it point to the second node.
Yeah.
And it's a simple test to. So I got that to work, and the way I verified was that after I do the checkpoint, I walk the list through the two heads, the one volatile and the one in the container, and they both follow the same nodes. So that tells me that what I have, it's working for simple cases of the container closure. Now I need to do some more testing. I haven't tested anything more complex than that, and I want specifically, I'm concerned about the case in which you do multiple commits, because I think I'm throwing away too quickly some metadata that I need if in case I have multiple commits.
Mm.
So what I would like to get done is some diagram that tells me what is the life cycle of that metadata, where I have to keep it or not, depending on where I am.
Okay. And, do you have to... is that automatic? You already have it, or you have to use some additional tool or write more code to
No, it's a matter of the design, basically. And this is also a limitation that we have in the old versions of PN.
Which is, what is the limitation again?
In SoftPN, every time that there's a new commit, when you compute the closure, you basically have to walk through your entire list of persistent pointers, because you don't know what changed.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right? So that means that...
Foreclosure.
Hmm. So the time that you spend computing the closure...
Hmm.
Start growing unnecessarily. Well, we can actually just check the pointers that are located in the pages that change.
Mm.
Because we know exactly which pages changed, but still the cost is increments linearly.
Mm.
And of course, when you add the total cost, it's not even linear, because it becomes quadratic, right?
Mm.
Because it's like arithmetic progression.
Yes. Yeah.
So now I improve some of that I improve the runtime cost by having constant operation that just collect enough metadata, and then I do all the heavy computation in the closure. But some of that metadata, I thought that I didn't need it after the closure, but I guess I do. And it's not clear exactly how much of that I need and what do I need.
So you made a jump from how we walk through all the pointers all over again to this additional metadata. So I didn't see, you know,
okay.
I lost you in between there, that jump.
Okay. So those two problems are related. And of course, they have to do with how much metadata you have to compute the closure. So what is not clear to me yet is whether what I have is enough or not to do the subsequent checkpoints. So I would like to spend some time going over the design. Because ideally, I want to keep the constant time in the critical path of the application. And I don't want to drag the same problem that we have in the old version, in which you have the closure remains, it continues to grow. In this case, in this new version of Softping, I believe that having that problem would be even more significant because all operations are in memory.
Hmm.
In the old version, even though the computation of the closure was somewhat expensive compared to the I/O operations, it's not that critical.
Hmm.
But in this case, having efficient closure, it's very important.
Yeah, I agree it is. But at the same time, I'm just wondering if we should tackle that problem right now before we have a version that's working, like the optimization, or wait for it until we have a version that functionally complete. And I don't know if waiting actually makes things worse later on, because you will do things that are dependent on how this closure is computed. I don't know the answers to those questions.
Well, I guess we will know the answer once it gets done, but my intuition tells me that it's probably worthwhile having an idea how things are going to do as opposed to making this incremental change that once we get to the limit, we say, oh, with what we have, we're going to solve this problem. We have to change this.
Yeah.
Requires changing.
But at the same time, you know, the advantage of doing a version that's functionally complete is because we have an additional baseline for the paper. And to say that here's what you can get if you were to have this optimization. And then you can to tell a story that incrementally motivates each optimization you did with data.
I see.
I think that's the advantage I see there. And with SoftPM, I think we did, I don't know if we did that with SoftPM or some other paper.
It was a paper that, yeah, I think I know which paper you're talking about, but it was not SoftPM. It was also the paper by Jorge.
Yeah.
I remember being in the presentation.
Okay.
Anyway, so the good news is that I can compute closure with one commit. I don't know if it will work with multiple commits yet. I haven't tested that out. But I can compute closure correctly with one commit, which we didn't have that last week. So.
It's definitely good progress. I think one of the other thing we thought would be straightforward, and I don't know, is that instead of manually annotating the pointers, just use the static translator to annotate pointers and so on.
Right.
And do you still think that's straightforward?
I don't think all the work is done. It's completely orthogonal to this code.
So I would say then, you know, spend some time doing that. Instead of this, I would do that first before this pointer optimization. Before the disclosure optimization.
But these, there are two issues here. One is the closure optimization, and the other one is that I haven't tested whether it would work what I have now with multiple commits.
Okay, yes. So that's functional completeness, that's important, that you support multiple commits.
Right. And I think that to accomplish that, I might have to make some changes in what I have now related to the metadata.
This is like metadata that's transitory or persistent. Is it volatile or persistent? Do you need it only for closures and checkpoints, or do you need it as part of the container itself?
No, it's all volatile.
Hmm.
It's all volatile. I don't know if this is a good time. Maybe I can give you a short review of what I have, and perhaps you can point out any limitations that I might have. Or maybe I should come with something that...
No, this is a good time to talk about it. We have time.
Okay. Great. Can I erase some of this?
Yeah, you can erase all of that.
The logic of the closure works more or less like this. I have so the pointer at and the malloc at, all they do is insert the location. In the case of the pointer, the location of the pointer in this hash table, pointer at hash table, and then the other one inserts on hash table the malloc.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the only overhead that we have in runtime. When there's a sync operation or a commit,
and these are volatile.
Yes, all this is volatile.
Mm.
When there's a commit, then what I do is that the first step is to, for every element that I have in the pointer at, I do a classification of these pointers. Basically, I identify which one of these pointers are in persistent memory. So, the ones that are in persistent memory, I move them to a vector that grows dynamically. So I get it out of here,
mm-hmm.
only persistent.
And this you will know only when you do discovery, right?
Yeah, all this happens in the discovery. So the first step is the classification of these pointers. And I know that there's at least one pointer that is in persistent memory, because that is the allocation that you make in persistent memory, and you make it point to something in volatile memory.
That's the root.
That's the root pointer,
correct.
Right. So there's at least one.
Mm.
Only persistent. To this vector. So I'm going to have, let's say here, one pointer. So the rest of the pointers that are not in persistent memory, some of them might be inside volatile locations, and some others not, because they might be in stack, for instance, right? So the ones that are in volatile locations, I put in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a malloc at tree.
Mm.
And what I have here, this tree is sorted by address. And the each node has the entry. The malloc at entry has the address, the memory address,
mm-hmm.
the persistent address. And we'll talk about why we have this size. And it has a vector of pointers. So, for every pointer here, I check your persistent memory. If that is yes, then I remove it from the hash table and put it here. If you are in the volatile location, I don't remove it from here. Before I was removing it, I don't remove it from here now. I find which entry in this tree you fall in, basically, because I have this information. I have, with using this two information, I know if it falls within that allocation. So I add it here to this vector position,
mm-hmm.
vector of pointers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Great. So by the end, I walk through the entire hash table, I'm going to have this tree built and this vector.
Yeah, that's the first pass.
The first pass. And okay. So the second step, I think, is to move. to move the whatever I have in volatile to persist every single iteration. So you do that by walking through this vector. So you iterate through the vector and you say, do you point, is your target a volatile allocation? And if so, then I find it here. I'm going to find into like this. Then I basically allocate memory in persistent memory, and that address I store here.
Mm.
And then I free this memory address because I want to remain constant the amount of memory learning that the application is consuming. Right? There is a memory allocation volatile.
Mm.
I allocate in persistent memory,
yeah.
Copy, and free this one.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep here the old address.
The old address, okay.
The volatile address.
It's still there, okay.
And here's the new address.
Mm.
Size remains the same.
Mm.
And you may or may not have pointers in that allocation.
Mm.
If you do have pointers in that allocation,
mm.
then you add these pointers to this vector because they are now in persistent memory.
Now, when those, what is in that vector of pointers?
This one?
Yeah.
These are the pointers that are inside your allocation.
But are these the values of the pointers or the addresses?
The location.
The locations. When you move, then those locations change.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes, they change. Mm. Yes, of course they change. Okay. So I move, the location changes, the target doesn't change.
Mm.
So you add this at the tail of this vector,
mm.
and you keep iterating, and that's how you compute the closure.
Mm.
After you do all that, and you have everything, you basically already move everything that was reachable from your container to persistent memory. The next step is to fix back references.
Mm.
And I basically do that by walking through this guy again.
Mm.
But now I have here everything that was originally in volatile.
Mm.
Remember, I removed the ones that are important persistent because I added to this place.
Mm-hmm.
So here I have both the same pointers that I have in this tree
mm.
and the ones that are not in this tree because they were part of the global
mm.
section or the stack.
Or they were moved.
If they're moving, they're in this tree as well, right? They're associated with the...
Oh, they're still there. You don't take them out of the tree after you move them.
Oh, no. After I'm moving, if there are pointers, I add here, but I remove it from the hash table.
Oh, you do.
Because they became persistent,
mm.
right? So those are handled by this
mm-hmm.
Iteration.
Okay.
So here I have the pointers that are in the stack, global, or the heap that were somehow not reachable
mm-hmm.
from the persistent container. So all of that could become back reference that I need to fix.
Yeah.
So the next step is to fix those back reference. And you do that by doing lookups in this tree.
Mm.
So you ask... do you have an allocation that falls? Does a star get falls in one of your allocations? And you can check that by basically looking at this IMEI address
mm-hmm.
and the size. And if so, you say, oh, yes, here it was moved to this address. This
mm-hmm.
is a new persisting address. So you can fix the target. You can rebase the point.
Yeah.
And you do that. And then after that... is there anything else? Yes. The next step is that whatever you have here, you need to store it persistently because all this is volatile. These are persistent pointers, and you need
mm.
to store that metadata persistently.
Mm.
So
I'm wondering what needs to be atomic here.
None of this has to be atomic.
No, I'm saying... Let's say that you moved the data into persistent memory, but you crashed before you wrote the vector of persistent pointers to persistent memory.
Right.
Is that a problem?
No, because all this is part of the sync, and the sync operation starts by setting a flag atomically.
Mm.
Right? So if you crash, you're going to say, oh, there was a sync point
okay.
in progress that didn't, so I restored to the previous version in which none of this existed, including the modification that I made in persistent memory.
Mm.
If I made any.
Okay.
So we're safe.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. So you fix the back reference as we explained here. And oh yes, storing this persistent. There's another data store that actually stores these values in persistent memory.
Hmm.
So for each one of these, I say, hey, put that in persistent memory. Now, that's the first problem that I have, which we mentioned before, is like there's no way for me to check for duplicates there. I'm basically putting, if it's possible, the same point is raised multiple times
mm-hmm.
and keep putting there. As we discussed, that doesn't affect correctness. It might affect performance because you could raise to the same point multiple times. Anyway, and that's the end story. After that, well, after that point, you do the sync operation as normal.
So what you're putting in persistent memory is the location of the pointer and the value? Both the
locations? Just locations.
No values.
No values.
Hmm. So you may have the same locations repeated in that persistent pointer list.
Yes. So what happens? Well, at the end of all this, my idea was, at the end of this, I don't need this guy anymore. I could remove this tree. I don't know if I need this vector or not. I don't know what I need to keep around or not. Like, what happens when an exit point comes? That's what it's not clear to me.
So your sync points are all independent. They're all independent. Sync
right.
points. So everything happens all over again at each sync point.
That's what I thought initially, but I don't know if that is true or not. Because it's possible. I don't know. It seems to me that it's possible that in the first sync point, I have some allocation that was never moved because it was not reachable.
Hmm.
But in the second one, it's possible that allocation now became reachable. And if I scattered what I have in this tree, then I lost that. Because the allocation was registered only once when it was allocated with the malloc app. So it's not clear to me what I can throw away and what I cannot throw away. I'm also concerned that since I freed this allocation, which I have to, it's possible that the application keeps making allocations and the library recycle the same address. So if I have a new malloc app, it was going to conflict with this one because that's what's used in the tree for the key. Is that clear?
Although you moved it,
in my tree, this is the key.
Oh.
By which I sort this and these objects.
Why can't you make the key memory address plus persistent address?
I cannot do that because that would mean that the key changes after it's inserted.
Oh. And you cannot look up my memory address anymore.
Correct.
Yeah, this is a problem. Oh yeah, libraries recycle allocations all the time.
Right.
So if you allocate something and free it and reallocate something else, you'll get the same
answer. It will come back. It will definitely come back.
Yeah, So, yeah, that's a problem that you do need to solve. Let me solve this thing.
Do you have the vectors of persistent pointers, or do you discard it?
I haven't discarded it yet, but I have it, but I don't know if I should keep it or not. It's not clear to me what happens. So I would like to have a diagram, some sort of state machine diagram, something like that, to actually fully characterize the life cycle of this metadata and what happens after we progress from one checkpoint to another.
If you move memory allocation that was volatile into persistent memory, why can't you discard that, just that allocation from the tree?
This one?
Yeah, if it's moved into persistent memory already, you fixed all the back references that
existed. No, I cannot discard it because it's possible that you have multiple pointers pointed to the same object.
Yeah.
So when that happens, only the first one triggers that memory allocation. The second ones won't trigger, but still you need to be able to discover it so you can fix them.
Yeah, yeah. So after you fix them, after you're done with the discovery,
remove all this tree?
Yeah.
That's
not the whole tree, but only the nodes that got moved into persistent memory.
Only the nodes that got moved?
The only reason you need information in that tree is if it's volatile data allocations for the next sync point, because they could potentially be discovered. Stuff that's already been discovered and moved to persistent memory, you don't need them anymore after the sync point is completed.
Because by then I already fixed all the backup
yeah.
system. So I could remove the ones
that got removed. Yes. I think so. And then you don't have this problem of reuse memory address, you know, troubling you.
Okay, that's good. So I remove some metadata. That's, I like that. That's good. What about this guy here?
That guy up there, that guy you need for doing the for the discovery, right? And if you're going to that will be needed or not depending on whether you do the optimized closure. If you do the optimized closure where you just look at pointers that are contained in dirty pages, then you don't need all of those pointers because you're not going to...
Just the ones that
are in dirty pages. But for that, to figure that out, you would have to have that optimization implemented, and you may need another tree of allocations.
I know between two commits, which persistent pages change. I know that it's very easy to find
yeah.
that out. So I could potentially use that to reduce space of search, saying basically what are the things that I need to check for my closure? Otherwise, this guy will continue to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow.
Mm-hmm.
Is there,
and I have to traverse that in the next commit.
Mm.
If you free some pointers in between two commits, what do you do then?
If I fix...
Free some pointers in between two commits.
Free allocations.
Well, I haven't implemented the free yet. But what I think it should happen is you just free that space.
And you already wrote it to the persistent memory.
Right.
So,
so if there's free...
You have to remove it from the vector of persistent pages that you stored, the one at the top.
The way I haven't invented free, but the way I'm thinking about it is that when you do a free, I basically record that and the memory doesn't get free right away. I wait until the sync operation happens to actually do the right thing at the time.
Yeah, free is something you need to still consider, right? I mean, you haven't thought deeply about it. So yeah, let's postpone that discussion until later. But here, I'm just wondering, currently you traverse all the persistent pointers one by one. Actually you don't.
Yeah,
no,
you have to walk these one by one because you need to find the location of the pointer. You know that doesn't change, but the value might change. So you have to walk this list again to see if there's something else that is reachable.
Mm.
And before you do that, you have to walk this hash table again and find new people, new pointers that should be moved to this vector.
Yeah.
And of course...
And to do, how do you do that?
Walking this hash table?
Yeah. No, how do you find out new point? Yeah, walking the hash table, yeah.
Well, you have to call pointer and not only for all pointers, right? Both volatiles and persistent.
Right. So
how that information is stored here.
Yeah, but how do you know if something is a persistent pointer?
Oh, I see. I know something by looking at its location. Right? Its location, if it falls within a page in my container, then it is persistent, otherwise it's not. That's how I know whether a pointer is in persistent memory or not. Because I basically search in a tree that has all the data pages.
Mm.
so I can tell in logarithmic time whether something is persistent or not.
I see. The pointer at is invoked when there is a new pointer declaration, right? Assignment. And there's a new pointer assignment.
Actually, ideally, you only do that when there's a pointer declaration. The assignment only changes the value, it doesn't change the location of the pointer.
True, but I think he's talked about how...
But if you're in a for loop, and anyway.
I'm saying that we decided not to do declaration for a good reason. We thought about this long and hard.
In the manual annotation, you can do that because you see what's going on. You can decide.
Yeah.
The automatic annotation is not smart enough to make that right.
Well, no, not just that. I mean, you may declare a pointer, but never assign it.
In that case,
it doesn't matter.
You never use it.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
So you shouldn't be recording it at all.
Right.
And if it points to something, you know, it's a wild memory, then you could have a corrupt container if you do record it.
Right, but that is true. But I think it's much more common that you declare a pointer once and use it multiple times, as the case in which you declare a pointer once and never use it.
Yeah, well, that if you're a good programmer, yes.
That case is easy to fix because even compiler tell you, hey, you have this variable here that you never use.
Yeah.
So I'm not concerned about that case. It's fairly easy to fix.
Well, it's not just about that. It's also about when you use it. If you don't use it after you call a sync, right, then that's the other thing. You may use it later after you call the sync.
That is true. Yes.
So you're talking about finding out which pointers to add to the vector. And you can only do that by using the tree, right? Allocation tree?
No, this is a tree for volatile allocations.
Volatile allocations.
There, I have another tree to index a persisting allocation.
Okay.
So to see if a pointer is persisting or not, I check on that tree.
Yeah. No, but initially you were talking about walking the pointer at hash table.
Yes.
And... Is that in the first phase of the container closure?
Yes, the first step is to walk through this guy and check if you have any pointers that are in persistent memory.
And these are all volatile allocations in the beginning, aren't they?
No, I'm talking about pointer and not this one. There are two hash tables, right? One for allocations and one for pointers.
Oh, okay.
You first start by walking this hash table.
Yeah.
There might be new pointers in persistent memory. Because it's possible that you may a new persisting allocation.
No, but that doesn't become persistent until the end of the closure.
No, when you make... but still, it's identified as persistent.
No, but you haven't computed the closure yet, so how do you know that there's a new persistent allocation?
Oh, no. In the pointer add, I just store that. You only determine whether it's persisting or not in the actual closure, yes.
Right.
Which happens in the commit.
And it's later. This is the first phase of the current closure, isn't it?
Okay. I'm lost.
Okay, so this pointer at is happening at any given time.
Pointer at happens in the critical path of the application.
Okay, so you add... And at that time, the pointer...
I don't know whether it's persisting or not. I just store its location.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't want to do anything expensive operation there.
Hmm.
Because it will slow down the application.
Okay. Yeah, this seems fine. I think you can do that one change we talked about, right? Which is to delete all the allocations that have already been moved to persistent memory. And then you address... First of all, you reduce the amount of... volatile metadata you need to keep, and second, you also address the problem with that address reuse. I think that's a good idea. Now, about the vector of persistent pointers, do we need it across sync points? I think that was the second question you asked.
I know that we need it because we need to be able to detect whether persistent pointers have changed the target or not. And an idea to reduce the search space is to only check data pages that have changed.
Hmm. But then how do you know which pointers are in that data page? By looking at the address of the pointers?
I don't think I have yet any association between allocations and pointers.
Hmm.
There
well,
are
except the malloc tree.
Right, but this goes away, right?
Hmm.
After you move it.
Hmm.
So I don't know, but I think we should use that to reduce the search space.
Well, one way is to have a page granularity data structure that keeps track of maybe pointers at the page granularity. Then as soon as you see a dirty page, you immediately know which pointers could have potentially changed.
And do you think that information should be kept volatile or should be made persistent? I think it doesn't have to be persistent, but we would like to be able to reconstruct that fairly
mm-hmm.
quickly
yeah.
from whatever persistent information we have.
Yeah. I think when we do the restore,
mm-hmm.
we fix all pointers, right?
Yes.
At that time, we could construct this data structure.
Yes.
So it doesn't need to be persistent.
So is it become clear why it's important to reduce the search space? Because you will make the closure slow.
Oh sure, yeah. I mean I'm not arguing that we shouldn't do that. I'm just saying that it would be good to have functionally complete implementation which could also serve the added benefit of serving as a baseline. In the evaluation.
Okay. So this is where I am right now. This is
yeah.
what I need to fix.
Yeah, I think if you're able to create that additional volatile data structure at the page granularity, then you don't need that vector anymore. After the sync operation. Right?
I think so. So just associate pointers to pages, basically.
Yeah, and this should also include the root, all the persistent pointers, including the ones at the root.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm just saying that I wasn't sure if you're considering the root as a special pointer or it's just like any other persistent pointer.
The root is in a special persistent point. I store it somewhere else.
What I'm saying is that the page that contains the root pointer should also belong to that new data structure we talked about. Because if the root changes, you have to do discovery all over.
Correct.
Then that's why I was wondering if the root is a special case or not.
No, I think it should be treated as...
As any persistent.
As any persistent.
Yeah, and if that is the case, then you're fine. Then this data structure, the per page granularity data structure, should contain the root as one of the entries, as an entry in one of the nodes.
So, if I detect change as I make do copy and write of data pages, there in a need to. So, if I do that, the vector can go away.
And then you only look at dirty pages and the pointers contained in the dirty pages to see if you need to...
Okay, this guy, the content of this guy doesn't go away, right? Checkpoints. I need to keep this. Because let's say that here I have a global pointer. I keep changing its value, right? I need to be able to fix it if I move whatever content is pointing to persistent memory.
Mm-hmm.
So I can never remove whatever I have here. And this guy, I think I can remove it because the information here becomes a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So between sync points,
mm-hmm.
I can remove this.
Yes. Yeah. That hash table, yeah, it's a hash table, so it's easy to modify things in there and search for stuff. Yeah, I think this, yeah, this sounds like you're on the right track. Good. Anything else we should talk about? Is everyone... So today is the 10th, right? 9th. So next week will be after the finals week. Do you want to meet during the break? Are you in town?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be here.
You'll be here. Okay. So yeah. So then let's meet next Tuesday at the same time. You should probably take a break at some point, though. Maybe a couple of weeks or a week at least. Do you have any travel plans?
No.
No. No.
Yeah.
You guys should take a break, though. I mean, at least a week where you take it off completely from work. You may or may not travel. It's important to take a break and do other things. All right. Okay. So, Leo, we sent out your fellowship application to VMware.